Chapter 39.
Do you know when the mountain goats give birth? Do you watch when the doe bears her fawn? Do you count the months till they bear? Do you know the time they give birth? They crouch down and bring forth their young. Their labor pains are ended. Their young thrive and grow strong in the wilds. They leave and do not return. Who let the wild donkey go free? Who untied his ropes? I gave him the wasteland as his home, the salt flats as his habitat. He laughs at the commotion in the town. He does not hear a driver's shout. He ranges the hills for his pasture and searches for any green thing. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? Will he stay by your manger at night? Can you hold him to the furrow with a harness? Will he till the valleys behind you? Will you rely on him for his great strength? Will you leave your heavy work to him? Can you trust him to bring in your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich flap joyfully, but they cannot compare with the pinions and feathers of the stork. She lays her eggs on the ground and lets them warm in the sand, unmindful that a foot may crush them, that some wild animal may trample them. She treats her young harshly, as if they were not hers. She cares not that her labor was in vain, for God did not endow her with wisdom or give her a share of good sense. Yet, when she spreads her feathers to run, she laughs at horse and rider. Do you give the horse his strength or clothe his neck with a flowing mane? Do you make him leap like a locust, striking terror with his proud snorting? He paws fiercely, rejoicing in his strength, and charges into the fray. He laughs at fear, afraid of nothing. He does not shy away from the sword. The quiver rattles against his side, along with the flashing spear and lance. In frenzied excitement, he eats up the ground. He cannot stand still when the trumpet sounds. At the blast of the trumpet, he snorts, "Aha!" He catches the scent of battle from afar, the shout of commanders and the battle cry. Does the hawk take flight by your wisdom and spread his wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar at your command and build his nest on high? He dwells on a cliff and stays there at night. A rocky crag is his stronghold. From there, he seeks out his food. His eyes detect it from afar. His young ones feast on blood. And where the slain are, there is he.
Well, good morning, everybody, and we're in part 52 of The Sovereignty of Our God, the book of Job, and continuing on with the same subtitle, The Creator's Confrontation of Job, and this is part 5, the who, not why. Yeah, so we're going to be in chapter 39, so if you please turn there, chapter 39, verse 1. So we're now continuing on into this great chapter 39 of God's longest monologue, targeted at one man, the great man Job. Yeah, and we've been seeing that this sermon of God, the Creator, stands out as a central section of the Hebrew Scriptures, and actually all of Scripture. God has never done this before. Yeah, so it should speak really loudly to us, because God, as I say, has never ever done this. He has descended in a whirlwind to speak specifically to one man, Job. And I would understand this being carried out via the agency of one of God's angelic messengers, an angelic being. But important to realize that these angelic beings, these angels, are speaking the words verbatim that God wants spoken. So they're speaking on behalf of God as his messenger. So it's important to realize God always speaks via a mediator. I mean, God even delivered the Mosaic Law to Moses on Mount Sinai via an angel, an angelic mediator, even though it indicates that Moses got it directly from God. Well, Moses did get it directly from God, but through the mediation of an angel from God. So no one is hearing directly from God, despite what some people say. Nobody hears directly from God. It's always through a mediator. So it's a really important point, because you'll have people in your life and surrounding your life that say otherwise. So we have to be clear that God has given other long revelations as well, such as I mentioned, Moses on Mount Sinai. I mean, for goodness sake, he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Yeah. And that's when God revealed the Ten Commandments to him, if you recall. But God also gave the rest of the law over a number of years, and some of it was addressed and relative to the priests of the redeemed of Israel. If you go quickly to one verse that we're all familiar with, Galatians 3:19. So this is a good one to have highlighted in your text, because it says exactly that. So Galatians 3:19 says, "Why the law then? It was added because of transgressions, sin, having been ordained through angels by the agency of a mediator, until the seed would come to whom the promise had been made." So we see there, God works through the mediation of angels. Yeah. But this monologue directly to Job falls into a really different category. This stands alone as God's longest monologue that specifically addresses and reveals his sovereignty, his majesty, and his creative abilities. But also his care of the whole animal kingdom we're getting into, and we've just started to get into, and we'll be continuing into it today. But it's also addressed to one specific man, the great man Job. Yeah. These other revelations in the scriptures were addressed to and specifically to the redeemed children of Israel, including specific instructions, as I said, to the priests of Israel, and spread over a much longer timescale than the one we're dealing with here, right? This direct monologue was specifically addressed at Job. I emphasize at Job, yeah? Even though it provides fantastic learning for all of us, it was all done at the same time, as far as we can tell as well, to Job. So this section of scripture really stands out alone from all others and should hold a really important and special place for us, as God never does this again in one place for his people. Now remember the paradigm shift God is making here for all of us. He's moving Job and us away from the why, isn't he? And moving us all instead to the who. So by now, we should all have started to make that shift. I'm moving away from the why questions and moving on to figuring out who the who is. Yeah. And as I say, we should now be making that shift from asking why questions and be focusing on a deeper understanding of the who. Who this sovereign God actually is, yeah? And the impact of that towards our approach and understanding of him. It'll have a huge impact on us if we do this. Because we will only then start to realize that the whys of life, which many people are driven by, and I've been driven by for decades, really are taken care of by the, remember, he who. Remember? He who created and runs the whole show. So to the extent we understand the who is to the extent that we understand the sovereignty of God. So regardless of how desperate the trials become, if we're convinced of the who, that God is a God of deliverance and love and mercy and goodness and kindness, we don't need to understand the whys. Yeah? We don't. And it'll get rid of a whole pile of frustration for all of us. So by the end of this book, we're going to see Job experiencing this reality. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that when we see that deliverance for Job, there is no record of Job ever asking another single why question. There's a clue there for us. And if he did, it's certainly not recorded in the text of Scripture. So I don't believe he did. So to the extent we make that shift, we get the benefit of seeing and coming to a greater understanding of who God really is. Yeah, so important. Because if you remember from part 51, we started out seeing a great insight to God's approach to Job's whole situation. But what we will see, ironically, is that our insight would not actually grow if God had merely gone on to explain the whys of Job's trials. Yeah? But rather than doing that, what did God do? Well, God makes us focus and points us all, including Job, to himself. To himself. Not the answers to the whys. He points us to himself. The who. Yeah? God never addressed any of Job's specific trials. We've seen it. It's really, really important. So I would suggest we don't go looking for answers here in Job. Answers as to the whys. Yeah? Because you're going to be, and I'm going to be, sorely disappointed. Because there are no answers to the whys of Job's trials. Now, bear in mind, we know from chapter 1 and 2 why they were going on. But nobody in the record does. Yeah, I never did. God never addresses the why. But he does address head on the who. Which we've been seeing actually dilutes the why questions, doesn't it? And makes them become almost irrelevant. So to the extent we understand him, is to the extent that we understand life. Yeah. In fact, they become so irrelevant, the why questions, that God never makes mention of one of them. That's how irrelevant they are in his mind. So much so that Job, in fact, never asks another why question in his future interruptions with God. So we should be asking ourselves, why? Why not? Yeah. But we're getting away from asking the why question, so we won't do that. So the last and fourth section of this previous chapter 38 started out God's focus on what? The animal kingdom. Can you believe that? Not just his creation, but now he's focused on the animal kingdom. Now, we all realize there were no chapter breaks in the original manuscripts. So this chapter 39 would, I suggest, have been better starting out in chapter 38, verse 39, where he starts out focused on the animal kingdom. So a quick review of chapter 38, and we saw, one, God's divine characteristics in verses 1 to 4, God's creative power and abilities in 5 to 11, God's complete dominion over his creation, 12 to 38. And finally, we're in this section, which takes us into chapter 39, where God is showing us his care over the whole animal kingdom. And that's verses 39 to 41 of chapter 38. So here in this chapter 39, it continues this very same animal theme, yeah, where God actually focuses on specific animals. And I'm going to list them out initially here, and then we'll read what God's involvement is with these animals. Yeah. So God continues this animal theme right through into chapter 41. Would you believe that? This is a focus for God. Yeah. A real focus for him. Now, can you imagine what had to have been running through Job's mind while God was communicating all of this via his angel, of course? In Job's mind, when, God, are you going to get to my why questions? Yeah? I need answers. Rather than giving me a rundown of all these animals in your creation. But that's what God does. He's answering Job's huge questions by focusing on this animal kingdom. It's really quite bizarre. But it's really, really intriguing how he does it. Because God knows what Job needs to hear. And he knows what we also need to hear when we are confronted with trials in life. And so often, it's not what we think we need to hear. Yeah. So often, we're asking the wrong why questions and therefore chasing and looking for the wrong answers. That is so true in life. Yeah. So this should be a huge lesson for all of us moving forward, right? Because it will actually reduce the frustrations of life dramatically if we make this paradigm shift. Now, bear in mind that we're listening here to God's revelation of himself and his sovereignty. Yeah? And how does God do that? He decides to point Job to take recognition of his creation. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And he does this all the way through to the end of chapter 41. Yeah. So we've got that to look forward to. So the animal world, yeah, which stretches from chapter 38, verse 39, all the way through to chapter 41, verse 34. I'm going to rattle through these animals pretty quickly, and then we'll go through the text. So here's the list. God provides for the lions and the ravens. And this is chapter 38, verses 39 to 41. Yeah. And all the way through this chapter 39, I'm just going to list them out. The mountain goats, verses 1 to 4. The wild donkey, verses 5 to 8. The wild ox, verses 9 to 12. The ostrich, 13 to 18. The war horse, 19 to 25. The hawk and the eagle, 26 to 30. And then there's a brief challenge of God for Job to answer him in chapter 41 and 2. And then in chapter 40, the behemoth. That's verses 15 to 24. And then the Leviathan in chapter 41, verses 1 to 34. Wow, what a list. Yeah, what a list. Now, as we get into chapter 39, just watch out here for, guess what, the do yous, yeah, and the can yous, yeah, coming up again, showing the limitations of man and specifically the limitations of Job being confronted in this specific situation. But we should see our limitations just in the same text, yeah. Again, it's God showing the limitations of mankind in general when compared to his sovereignty, his creative power, and the care he exerts over his creation. And we make the mistake of thinking that when God finished his creation in Genesis, he just decided to vanish. Yeah? So far from it. He is actively involved in all of its details. And we're going to see it. So, chapter 39, verse 1. Man, just look at this confrontation of Job. Job, do you know the time the mountain goats give birth? Do you observe the calving of the deer? And I put these in red in your notes so you don't miss them. Yeah. How involved are you, Job, in that? Yeah. Verse 2. Can you count the months they fulfill, or do you know the time they give birth? What do you think Job's thinking? No, I've got a clue. Yeah. And these are high mountain wild goats. Yeah, they're not even in view for most people. There's also a reference in Psalm, you don't need to go there, I'll read it to you. Psalm 104:18 says, the high mountains are for the wild goats. There you go. The cliffs are a refuge for the Shepanim. And the Shepanim, if you look them up, it's not a very common word for an animal, but if you look them up, they're cute, furry little balls, animals. Yeah, I'm sure that I say they're cute, they'll probably eat your hand off, but they're common in that part of the world. Yeah, small furry arm animals, and you can Google them if you want to see the photo. So God here is making the point that man is so often totally unaware as to what and when these animals give birth. Yet this happens all the time to animals in the wild. He's not referring here to domesticated farm or zoo animals. These are animals in the wild. They're not even in view for most people. They're hidden in the mountains and in the deep forests of his creation. Yet he's totally aware of what's going on with them. These wild mountain goats, they're sitting on ledges that you and I couldn't even walk on. Totally inaccessible to man. Yet God's making the point that he, God, knows the exact time they give birth. Yeah? So, Job, do you know these details about this creation? Job's thinking, no, not got a clue. Can't even see them. Yeah? So God here, you catching this, is taking the credit for looking after animals that man cannot even look after or even see. man. Verse 3. They kneel down, they bring forth their young, they get rid of the labour pains. Their offspring become strong, they grow up in the open field, they leave and do not return to them. Now, look at verse 5. Here's the who turning up again. Who sent out the wild donkeys free? Did you do that job? And who loosed the bonds of the swift donkey? So Job, were you the one to do all that? Job's thinking, not me. I don't have a thing to do with that. But who does? Sovereign God does. Sovereign God does. He's taking credit for it. Look at verse 6. To whom I gave the wilderness for a home and the salt land for his dwelling place. But you see in the compassion and care God shows towards the animals of his creation. And I think it's really interesting that really evil people of life, you know, these extremely evil people of life, criminologists have figured out very often what they do is they lash out at animals before they lash out at people. Often from an early age. I think that's really interesting. Because God here is showing his compassion and love for animals. Now, salt lands were usually desolate places. Yeah. But what we see here that God has the power to make them habitable. And also God has the power to make the fruitful lands into a salt place for his created animals. I'm going to read a couple of verses from Psalms on this. You don't need to turn there, but it's Psalm 107, 33 and 34. He changes rivers into a wilderness and springs of water into a thirsty ground, a fruitful land into a salt waste because of the wickedness of those who dwell in it. Interesting. So verse 7 of 39. He scorns the tumult of the city, the shoutings of the driver he does not hear. He explores the mountains for his pasture and searches after every green thing. So this is communicating the freedom these animals have and that they're not restrained by anything or anyone. The driver in that verse, some say, refers to a tax collector. Now, coming up, guess what? Some more can use and will use. Yeah. Verse 9. Will the wild ox consent to serve you? Or will he spend the night at your manger? Now, there's a whole pile of different ideas as to whether this is an ox or some other difficult animal to train or control. I'm not going to get into it. But what's clear is it's a very strong animal. And it was an animal that was not used to being in subjection to anyone. And some actually have referred to it as being a rhinoceros, as it was never domesticated. So, guess what? I'm going to leave it at that. Yeah. But look at verse 10. First two words. Can you bind the wild ox in a furrow with ropes? Or will he harrow the valleys after you? Will you trust him because his strength is great and leave your labor to him? Will you have faith in him that he will return your grain and gather it from your threshing floor? So whatever animal this was could not be trusted to do anything the master wanted it to do. I think that is the point being made here by God. Yeah. Now just watch out now what God takes credit for in these next few verses. And one thing that's very clear is that God's animal kingdom can be really, really cruel at times. I came across a video just the other day which was showing six wild wolves hunting a lone bear. Man, you start to see just how cruel nature can be at times. And we're going to see it here in verses 13 to 18. But have you ever watched two grizzly bears fighting? I watched it the other day. Absolutely horrendous. Absolutely no mercy whatsoever. Fighting to the death almost. But what does God highlight? The ostrich. The ostrich. Yeah, verse 13. Hey, the ostrich's wings flap joyously with the pinion and plumage of love. Again, there's a lot of people talking about this being a comparison between ostriches and storks, actually. Yeah. And I'm going to leave a long comment by Albert Barnes. Of course, I've mentioned him before in previous earlier sessions. This seems to be a comparison between ostriches and storks. And I'm going to leave the notes in the notes for you to read because it's quite long. It's really interesting. And also a link to ostriches in general. Yeah, really fascinating animal. Dumb, but fascinating. And ostriches, they're actually the largest living bird. Stands over 6 foot tall and often over 300 pounds. Wow. Won't be having one of them for Thanksgiving. And they can run consistently faster than a cheetah. More than 40 miles an hour for longer periods than any cheetah can last. A cheetah is faster, but doesn't have the endurance. Cheetahs are sprinters. The ostriches are marathon runners. Yeah. So in a long race, guess who I'll be betting on? If I did bet, which I don't, I'd be betting on the ostrich. Look at verse 14. For she abandons her eggs to the earth and warms them in the dust. And she forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may trample them. She treats her young cruelly as if they were not hers. Though her labor be in vain, she is unconcerned. But look at verse 17. Why does she do that? Because God has made her forget wisdom. Yeah? And has not given her a share of understanding. Man. What a sovereign God. And again, we're still in a poetic discourse here, aren't we? But God set all of this up when he created these animals. Look at verse 18. When she lifts herself on high, she laughs at the horse and his rider. I mean, have you ever seen a laughing ostrich? Of course we haven't. Yeah, again, it's figurative, isn't it? It's this figure personification where human attributes are given to animals and inanimate objects. But what we see here is that the war horse is not a match for the ostrich. So here are more do use coming up. Again, God emphasizing to Job God's power and his sovereignty over his creation and over Job. I mean, is this widening our view of God's involvement in this creation or what? And just how far his sovereignty stretches? Yeah? Look at verse 19. Do you give the horses might? Do you do that, Job? Do you clothe his neck with a mane? Job, how are you getting on figuring out how to put that mane on a horse? What? But look what God's taking the credit for. So every time you look at a horse now, you look at that mane, you think, hey, God got involved in that. God got involved in that. But look at the detail. The strength of that horse, the mane of that horse, our God is involved in. Man. And I would understand this in the context to be a war horse, a horse trained to be in battle. Yeah. And we get a real insight into these type of horses when we see these police riots, which we see all too often. They go charging into these riots without any hesitation. They're totally unfazed by virtually anything going on around them. So fearless. Look at verse 20. Job, do you make him leap like the locust? It says majestic snorting is terrible. How involved are you in that, Job? Let me ask us, how involved are we? Yeah. Again, complete silence from Job for now. So back to the war horse, verse 21. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes out to meet the weapons. Look at this. He laughs at fear and is not dismayed, and he does not turn back from the sword. Wow. I mean, have you ever heard a horse laughing? Yeah, again, personification, isn't it? Figure of speech, God's giving this emphasis. Verse 23. The quiver rattles against him, the flashing spear and javelin. With shaking and rage, he races over the ground. You got that picture? Fantastic. And he does not stand still at the voice of the trumpet. Nothing stops this warhorse. As often as the trumpet sounds, he says, ha ha. He scents the battle from afar and the thunder of the captains and the war cry. Man, these horses are something else. I think it's one of the greatest animal creations on earth. Horses. But what a picture God is painting here for us. Yeah. What a detailed picture God is going to. But why is he doing this? Because he's trying to show us, hey, I am completely sovereign. There is no detail in this creation that I don't take credit for. Yeah? So why are you asking any why questions of me? Do you remember Romans 9? We shouldn't have the nerve to ask any why questions of God. And I think the only reason that we do it is because we don't understand who he is. Yeah. But what we have to take away from these examples is how God the Creator is intrinsically linked himself to it all. Yeah. I mean, have any one of us linked God in this detailed way to the creation? To these animals of the kingdom? I know I sure haven't. I would suggest we all haven't, but we need to. Why do we need to? Because God does. This is not our idea. It's not my idea. You and I didn't write the book. God is doing this, yeah? And he's doing it for a reason. And the reason being, it expands our view of God's magnificent sovereignty and majesty. Look at verse 26. Hey Job, is it by your understanding that the hawk soars, stretching his wings toward the south? So whenever we see a hawk soaring, we should be giving God the credit for that. Because he's taken the credit for it. Yeah. And not only that, look at verse 27. Is it at your command that the eagle mounts up and makes his nest on high? Have you ever looked at an eagle's nest and thought, oh, God's responsible for that? Yeah, God's responsible for it. Yeah, God's taking the credit for it. Because he instilled in that eagle the ability to do it. So he's saying to Job, Job, did you command all this to happen? Oh no, that was me, wasn't it? Every time. Every time. It's me, Job. But we're catching on to what God is taking the credit for here. And throughout this whole book, it's just breathtaking, all of this. Elements of his creation that we have never given God credit for, but he's taken the credit for it. Incredible. Are you finding that God's sovereignty is far wider than any of us have ever realized? So much wider than any of us have ever realized. I mean, did any of us realize he gets involved with an eagle making a nest? Did we? That's our God. That's his creation. Look at verse 28. Incredible, next few verses. On the cliff he dwells and lodges, upon the rocky crag and inaccessible place. So they're up there in the inaccessible places as well. From there he spies out food, and boy, do they. You can see a mouse running for miles. And from there he spies out food, his eyes see it from afar. His young ones also suck up blood, and where the slain are, there is he. There is he. I'm sure you've seen these nature programs where you see eagles and vultures flying high in the sky and people thinking, hey, there's something dead there. There's some food there. It's exactly where they are. So that's the end of chapter 39. So once again, God here is magnifying his great sovereignty. A sovereignty, I might add, that I can safely say we were all totally unaware of until we read it here. The detail God goes into here is, again, absolutely magnificent and breathtaking. And what's he doing here? Well, he all the time is reducing the pride of man here to realize what? Just how small we really are in the whole scheme of his amazing creation. Yeah. He's taken us down into the minute details of his animal kingdom to reduce our pride. Because remember, from, again, Romans 9, we're the kitchen utensils, aren't we? We're the pots. He, God, is the one who skillfully brought it all to pass out of nothing, am I, Dad? Yeah. As the amazing potter. He's totally in charge of it all. But not as a one-time act. Yeah, he continues to be involved in every ongoing detail of his creation. So he, God, is in charge. Yeah, unless, of course, he passes authority to somebody else. But even when God does that, he doesn't relinquish his total sovereignty. We just get the opportunity to be amazed by his creation. While, of course, a large proportion of the world are ruining his creation by bad stewardship. Yeah. And we do it without even trying. So go to 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4, as we finish off here. Here's some authority being handed over in this verse to somebody we're quite familiar with, Satan. Yeah. Look what God does in 2 Corinthians 4:4. In whose case the god of this world, small g, has blinded the minds of the unbelieving so that they might not see the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. And don't address that to all the outsiders, by the way. You gotta read the context here. Yeah. So for a certain period of time, he, God, has given authority over the world to who? Satan. Because the term God refers to dominion, authority. Yeah. Have you noticed God, the true God, is not the prevailing power and authority today? Yeah. Satan, the God with a small g, is prevailing, if you haven't noticed. Yeah. And just yesterday, a war started in Israel. Yeah. And they're heading for Jerusalem, according to the news media. But that has a limitation for a time, that authority. And there's a time when Satan unleashes himself on the earth without restraint, after being bound up for 1,000 years. Yeah. But even when Satan does that, it bears no resemblance to the wrath of God when that turns up. And that's depicted in Revelation chapter 16, if you want to read that. Again, God uses his angelic messengers to deliver these bowls of wrath. And believe me, these are messages none of us want to be a part of, I might add. Yeah. So this week, we've seen God focused on the sovereign God's created animal kingdom. Fantastic. And he's shown us the care and love and compassion he has towards it, while at the same time showing Job his complete lack of any involvement in it all. Yeah. Which in turn emphasizes our lack of involvement in it all as well. Remember the can you and the do you statements to Job? They refer right back to you and I. Because can I, can you do any of this stuff? Absolutely not. So the next chapter, chapter 40, starts off with a brief challenge to Job to answer God in verse 1 and 2, as I mentioned. So we'll get into that next time we're together, Lord willing, where we will hear Job's response to God's challenge to answer him back. And it may just not be the answers we would all expect to hear from Job. Yeah. So looking forward to getting into that, Lord willing, the next time we meet. Meanwhile, have a great week. Amen.